But I think secret sauce is latching on to what are the key strategic priorities of the organization, of the C-suite, of the board members. What challenges do they all share? What challenges are they all invested in solving? And then learning them to the root of the pain, to the true cause, and then gauging where may I be able to help or where I may not, and then walk away.
Welcome to Winning Streaks. I'm your host, Tanvir Mustafa, and every week I get deep into the stories and strategies of experts, champions, business moguls, and industry leaders to find out how you can win the day and win at life. If you're committed to never settling for the status quo and consistently challenging yourself to new heights, then this is the show for you. In return, I commit to bringing you insightful, practical, and no BS conversations that will help you create your next big win.
My guest today is an account executive at MuleSoft and a member of the Untap Your Sales Potential Gold Program. In the past year and a half, he's gone from the high-velocity startup sales space to a completely strategic SaaS sales role. And he just wrapped the fiscal year well over plan as the number one rep on his team. Introducing Nitin Mehta. Nitin, welcome to the show, brother.
It's great to be here, Tanvir. Thanks for having me on.
I'm so excited for this. You and I have had the opportunity to meet together a couple of times now, but I'm never going to forget. I don't know if you remember that night, but the first time we met was at Ian Koniak's house. Yep. In his backyard, chatting over fire. Do you remember what we were talking about?
Yeah, I remember. We first walked on the beach.
Right? Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. We were first walking on the beach. We were talking about a couple of deals, actually. And just like, I remember first it was about getting more specific around ROI and cost of inaction. And then we were just hanging out, having dinner with his wife and kids. And then he was talking about how big of an achievement it was to, I guess, get that home and the plans he had ahead for the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a good time.
You were also just about to get married. It was a couple months before, right?
I was just about to get married. I just started working at Untap Your Sales Potential like the month before. So it was all still very fresh. And to be on that walk with you, soak in the sights, which were beautiful, and then hear some sales coaching on the side was awesome too. But you've made just this massive transformation since the time that you've been working with us. To start off, I want to ask, you know, what is the one thing you've learned in the past 12 months that has made everything else about your job easier?
One thing that's very tough. Maybe being very proactive, being very intentional. And there's just 100 ways to go about it, whether it be using 12-week year and weekly scorecards, or blocking out our calendars, or doing meditation before work, or being more disciplined about exercise, or setting strategic time for the important, not urgent items, which are very easy to neglect. So I think just all that it falls under that umbrella of being intentional and proactive, mm-hmm. right? Rather than reactive and just using white space to be distracted.
Yeah, so important. And it's one of the quickest changes that sales reps can start making, and one of the most impactful. But I know definitely one of the big changes that you mentioned there that you've made has been the meditation piece, right? I think before sort of being a part of working with us, mindfulness and meditation weren't as much of a part of your schedule. But since then, it's been something that you've adopted. How has meditation and mindfulness, well, first of all, how'd you get started? And then how has it played a part in the way that you show up as a sales rep on a regular basis?
Yeah, Ian had suggested me to do it, to just be more in the moment. I mean, just like living in New York, working in sales, traveling a lot, hyper-stimulation. I have two phones, work phone, personal phone, 100 other things. So I think it just really helped be more in the moment. Not always thinking about, okay, what's next? Let's go. It was just to be a lot more in the present. Mm-hmm. I think it helped a lot. And it also just really teaches discipline, because it's as simple as 10 minutes a day. But why should that be difficult, right? It sounds so easy. Like, why can't you just spend 10 minutes every single day to make the time for it? But I'm sure there's days for all of us where we don't feel like doing it, you know, with maybe you wake up late or you're traveling or you have a busy day ahead, whatever it is. But just, yeah, staying disciplined on doing that, I feel makes me disciplined about other things. Because if I just start the day with that tiny win of like, I said I would do this and I did it, I think it helps a lot.
Yeah.
And I think it helped me a lot in sales too, because it made me more in the present with my customers. It made me, I think, prioritize even my pipeline more by the problem I was solving rather than the account size, which is an unintended impact. I remember the first, I think, session I had with Ian, or it wasn't the first, maybe it was the second or the third, it was supposed to be around territory management. It was in the beginning of the year, I just got my fresh territory, and we spent like 5 or 10 minutes talking about territory management and 45, 50 minutes on just like being in the moment in meditation. And I looked at it 6 months later, and that actually helped me more with territory management than like tier A, tier B, tier C, tiering of accounts, because it helped me with what I just mentioned before, was prioritizing my pipeline by the problems I was solving, because I just felt so in the present with each customer. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, I had, I don't want to say the specific customer names, but I had a really massive publishing and media company in my territory last year that I was super excited about. And then I had another smaller local book publisher. And I was going to, of course, prioritize the massive media company. But as I just really understood the problems and got in the moment, I realized I could actually help that small publisher far greater. And that's where my deals came from. That's where the ACV came from. So that's just an example.
That's such a wise thing to say, man. I can't tell you. I mean, I'm guilty of it too. I think we all are. Is we see those big shiny objects in our territory, right? Those big organizations, and we're like, all right, we got to go and capture those. But those companies are big. What about the ones that are lagging behind? What about the ones that are trying to become the next big company? You're solving based on size of the problem, not size of the company, which I think is such a, just, it's like an epiphany moment, even for me listening to that right now. It's like, okay, where can I help the most? And then hone in on that. And so that was something that you did. You, again, you're number one at MuleSoft last year on your team. I want to know, when you were making that transition, right? Because you were previously in the startup space. Now you're in SaaS strategic sales. What were some of the biggest like surprises to you? Some of the biggest challenges to you? Some things that you noticed when you got in and you were like, damn, like I got a lot to learn here. Like what were some of those things and barriers that you ran into?
First is just what I was the least surprised or the least expected, the most surprised about, was how much noise and how many distractions there are. So I was always told like, hey, you're not used to a corporate environment. You know, there's more red tape and all that. Like that I expected. And then I saw bits of it and it didn't really bother me. Like it was fine. But I didn't realize just how mega focused I'd have to be on a daily basis of just like eliminating the noise, learning when to say no, not checking Slack messages, not getting on unnecessary calls, like prioritizing my time, craving that white space and, you know, using it for highly strategic revenue generating activities. I would say that was just it's something I hadn't even considered. And it could also just have to do with growing up and, you know, maturity as well, getting more experience. It was a combination. I would say that was one big thing. And then the other is just at Salesforce, there's the concept of you have primes and co-primes, which are like specialists. For example, MuleSoft, where I work, Slack, Tableau. And then you have Salesforce Core. So Salesforce Core owns the relationship with the customers. Mm-hmm. And then we are specialists that partner with Salesforce Core. Mm-hmm. And that creates its own set of it's an adventure. Sometimes it's very exciting and we're in like really close partnership and we're running a tight deal together. Sometimes there can be conflict of interest and it's unclear whether it helps or hurts to have that Salesforce core. But I think it's great for the most part. And that was just something very new to me, because at the startup, I was effectively core. There was no concept of like primes and co-primes and core AEs.
Yeah. Yeah, it took me a couple of years when I was at Salesforce to even get used to the whole idea of co-primes and like working with each other, collaborating each other to make deals happen. And that's a sales cycle on its own. You know, you're not just selling externally to the prospect. You're also selling internally to your co-primes, to your team members, et cetera.
Yep.
But I like those few challenges that you called out, because it's true, right? There is a ton of noise in strategic sales and so many priorities that you can put your head down towards and go after. But when you sort of started working with us, I remember, at least from what I recall, you had a very clear intention of, I want to be number one. I want to be the best. I want to get better. And I want to sort of lead the pack here. As soon as you sort of set that intention, what do you think are the main contributors that ultimately led you to ending up at number one? What were some of the things that you started putting in place that brought you to that point?
Yeah, I'd say a few things were, one was just very effective challenger selling, and really improving on it and getting specifically good at challenger selling for my customers. My segment was communications, media, and technology. So understanding what their main objectives were, understanding what mattered to the CEO, the CFO, board members, and not just, oh, the CTO, CIO, which is often the target buying persona for MuleSoft. I think that was huge. And adding to that, or what goes hand in hand with understanding that first, is I was able to leverage MuleSoft as a foundation of success for other projects. So traditionally, people sell MuleSoft to, like, again, CIO, CTO, VP of IT, and they're heavily IT-driven projects. It's about, you know, leveraging our IPaaS or API management or even automation to automate a lot of processes, create operational efficiency, solve system and data challenges. So heavily going to that IT leader in an organization. But I noticed that out of my new logo ACV, which is the main driver of ACV last year, that only contributed to 40%. So if I had just focused on that method, I would have done 40% of my new logo ACV. Forget even trying to, like, be at the top or exceed my goals. I wouldn't even have hit my quota if I had done that. So I guess the question is, where did the other 60% come from? And it was to leverage MuleSoft as the foundation of success for other projects. So really latching on to what do CEOs and CFOs care about? And I was in mid-market. I wasn't an enterprise at the time. And a very popular challenge for these companies of, like, around 1,000 employees or so, doing like a few hundred million in revenue, they wanted to grow to 1 billion in revenue. And they weren't there. They obviously weren't there, but they were trying to figure out what's the path to even get there. And often it had to do with getting enterprise customers themselves. And beyond getting enterprise customers, they wanted to cross-sell, upsell their existing customers. They wanted to shift to multi-product scale. They wanted a very unified data model of their customers, clear view of how they transacted, how they recognized revenue. And often many of the processes in place were, like, manual spreadsheets, outdated systems, legacy systems, homegrown systems. They weren't talking to each other. Even processes were not defined or optimized. And CEOs and CFOs cared about this. They would join calls with us when we were having these conversations. They didn't give a shit to have an integration conversation, right? So really just latching on to those priorities and then seeing where could we help accelerate the delivery for achieving those goals and mitigating the risk and just being very effective at challenger selling. So I personally, at Salesforce, there's a team called Revenue Cloud, or Rev Cloud for short, that owns CPQ, Configure Price Quote, and our billing products. So I would partner with the RevCloud team saying, hey, look, you have a, you're working a deal here. Mm-hmm. You're getting to the CEO and CFO. Let me help you accelerate the success of your project. And let me help mitigate the risk. Because aligning with those challenges we just uncovered about this customer wanting to expand enterprise customers, shift to multi-product scale, cross-sell, upsell. Number one is to replace a lot of those manual processes in place mm-hmm. with CPQ or with billing. Mm-hmm. But then where does that data sit? Where else does it need to move? Does it need to talk to Salesforce? Does it need to talk to an ERP or another accounting system, invoicing system? If it's still in silo, or if it's still siloed, then it's an incomplete solution. So that's where I would get involved.
And that's how you challenge. That was your sort of challenger point of view as you're presenting it.
Yeah. So I would challenge. One, I had to challenge a bit internally. But even if I think I wasn't at a large organization like Salesforce and at a smaller company, I still think it would have worked because there were situations where the customer didn't go with our RevCloud product, our RevCloud team's products. They went with a competitor CPQ and billing solution. I still found a way to get a seat at the table and I still closed the deal. But it was a similar story, similar talk track.
Okay.
And I wasn't trying to say that MuleSoft is the number one priority and integration is the number one priority of your organization. I was just understanding this is what matters to you. You already have a path to solve a part of it, but it's incomplete. This is why it's incomplete. This is how we can help you solve it. And this is what happens if you don't think about a clear integration strategy.
What you just said is a gold mine for anybody who considers mm-hmm. themselves selling a technical solution. There's a lot of folks that I speak to who are like, yeah, we have a very technical product. So we're talking with IT, we're talking with CIO, CTO. And then I'll always ask, like, are you speaking to a business leader? Are you tying it back to business outcomes? Because that's essentially what you've done, right? The integration conversation can happen with engineers all day long, but especially now when CFOs are scrutinizing proposals more than ever before, there has to be a clear tie back to business priorities, right? And that's what you've done. Yep. That's how you've sort of brought the challenger model to your solution. My question to you, Nathan, is, listen, everybody's heard about Challenger by now, right? Every sales rep should know about the book or have heard about the philosophy, but not a lot of people are doing it correctly, or not a lot of people mm-hmm. are doing it to begin with. They're not sure how to execute Challenger. What would be your advice to them? Like, what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see people are doing when it comes to Challenger selling? And what would be your advice in order to do it properly?
Yeah. Well, firstly, I think most people don't read the Challenger customer. They read the Challenger sale and they stop. The Challenger customer is way more in depth and shares a complete flip perspective. So I would say that's like the lowest hanging fruit step. Just read the second book.
Nice.
Have you read the second book?
I've read like half of the second book, but I've not gone through the whole thing. So there you go.
you're halfway there. So finish the second book. One takeaway that I'll never forget is the book explains it about, and forgetting the exact words, but it's something along the lines of that you attract and you end up working with people like yourself. Mm-hmm. So you'll often see, how they compare the relationships building salesperson and the challenger seller, right? So the relationships building salesperson, often they make best friends with like sales ops. And I see it a lot at Salesforce. So they'll make best friends with like an admin. Mm-hmm. But even if it wasn't Salesforce, another organization, it's with like a lower level middle management person or like a day-to-day admin type that doesn't have much influential power. Okay. And they like spending time with them. They take them out for lunch, for happy hours. They have like weekly or biweekly syncs, sometimes even 2-3 times a week I've seen before. And they spend so much time, and they call them, they're my POC, they're my main point of contact, this admin, whatever their name is, right? And they just get so stuck to that person, and then they kind of are scared of the idea of getting to an executive, or they feel they can't command the respect. They feel that, oh, we need to work with the admin, or I need to pull one of my executives just to even try to go get that executive on the phone. Whereas a challenger seller, I think, starts to just like get impatient after that second call with that admin, where they're like, I'm wasting my time talking to this person. If I'm talking to this person, I need to be respectful. I'm not saying like, you know, be rude, but need to understand what is my clear intent to getting to power of talking to this person. Is it that I already have access and that I've gone down, like yo-yo selling, which we can get to in a sec, and that I'm just trying to get insights from this admin so that I can take it back up as a part of my broader findings for a read back to an executive? Or are we trying to leverage the admin as a champion to go higher up? Mm-hmm. And if so, are they even a champion? Are they even going to stick their neck out? Or are they likely too scared, which is often the case? So I think that that's a huge problem that I've seen challenger selling, is just being stuck to people without power, not even being able to challenge, or just challenging the wrong person.
So how do you tangibly approach that? Like, if you've got an admin in front of you who, like, let's say, because I had this happen to me, that's why I ask, right? I was, I was working with the CFO, or our CFO was our sort of, you know, executive contact. They had like a Salesforce admin. And then I sent a prospecting email to like the CMO. CFO messages me back and he's like, hey, we talked about, like, we didn't really talk about it, but in the first call that we had, but he's like, hey, I'm your point of contact if you want to message anybody, any executives, otherwise work with Adam, who is the admin who you're connecting with on a weekly basis. Nobody else, like everybody else is barred off. So now I remember I had this admin contact who I was meeting with once every 2 weeks and really not making too much progress. What do I do? Mm-hmm. What does someone in that position do?
Okay. So, well, I guess let me ask you, what was your reason? What value were you providing to, you said the COO who you were trying to get to, right?
CFO, CMO was the person that we were trying to get to.
CMO, CFO and CMO. Okay.
Yeah.
So what value are you providing?
Well, to the CMO, the pitch was, I think they were starting to think about doing some more like outbound marketing, like doing more ads, getting more publicity in that mm-hmm. sense out there. So I can't tell you exactly what I put in my prospecting email, because frankly, I don't remember. It was a couple of years ago now.
That's fine.
But it's probably something along the lines of, hey, I spoke with Ben. He mentioned that you're interested in getting like an outbound ad strategy going. Have you thought about blank, blank, and blank in terms of ad strategy? We can help. Do you have 15 minutes, 20 minutes to talk about this? Something of that nature.
Yeah, I get you. I think there's different ways you could go about it. One is to just, okay, if you're going to work, you're stuck working to the admin, it's you try to see what other information can I get from them to then go multi-thread the account, right? You don't necessarily have to be stuck to admin and then straight to CFO and CMO, right? You can say, all right, I got some information from the admin. Let me go try now like a head of marketing. Mm-hmm. And then you can tell the head of marketing in a little clever way that, oh, we've been having conversations with, you know, Susan, the admin, Michelle, the CMO, and I don't know, Tyler, the CFO, and we've learned XYZ. As we, you know, continue this evaluation, I thought it would be especially important to get your insight on this project X that you're working on. So I wanted to make sure that your feedback on that project was included in the project that I'm working on. We talk for like 20 minutes.
Oh, and I then, love that. That's so good. It's like, it's almost like they're missing out.
They'll feel FOMO.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're missing out, right?
Wow.
they'll feel FOMO and they'll probably respond and get a call, or they will be like, who the hell is this guy? And then they'll go talk internally. They'll go talk to the CMO or they'll go talk to the admin. And now you have just gotten so much conversation about you inside this company. And good chance that that's going to be good press, even if it creates tension. Right. Small chance somebody gets really pissed off and says like, hey, you're stepping on toes. And I mean, if that's the case, like, who cares?
Yeah, I think one of the most valuable pieces of advice that I've heard, I don't know who said it, but it's like, if you're not pissing somebody off, then you're not doing your job right.
Like, yeah, 100%.
You've got to have some level of pushback. You know, it's like in the B2C space, people say, if your prices aren't high enough, or if you're not getting enough no's, then you're kind of selling yourself short.
This episode of Winning Streaks is brought to you by Untap Your Sales Potential. 2 years ago, I was blindly navigating my role as an account executive at Salesforce. I didn't have any structure or any organization to my approach. And if you would have asked me what my strategy was, I would have told you that I was just throwing as much at the wall as possible and seeing what sticks. This led me to extreme burnout, high levels of anxiety, and frankly, a complete lack of fulfillment from my role as a sales professional. It honestly made me even wonder if I was even cut out to be in sales. That's when I found the Untap Your Sales Potential coaching program. Founded by Ian Koniak, Untap Your Sales Potential is a sales coaching program that teaches the exact frameworks, processes, and strategies that have helped Ian close over $100 million in sales across industry giants such as Ricoh and Salesforce. With multiple number one finishes and seven-figure years, Ian's expertise is unparalleled. This program will help you access the mindset, habits, and selling skills of the top 1% of tech sales professionals. After I started working with Ian, I ended up finishing number one on my team 2 years in a row, closed over $3.6 million in sales, and earned my spot at President's Club. Most importantly, it helped me rediscover my purpose and experience true fulfillment. But don't just take my word for it. We've had over 150 students go through this coaching program, with many of them shattering income records, exceeding their quotas, and achieving levels of success they never thought possible. So if you're ready to level up and untap your sales potential, visit untapyoursalespotential.com and book a free strategy call with me, where we'll talk through where you're struggling, where you'd like to improve, and how we can help. Again, that's untapyoursalespotential.com to book your free strategy call today. Now let's get back to the show.
That we talk about all the time called yo-yo selling. And that, yeah, I know was sort of like a really valuable piece in your toolkit that you leveraged quite a bit to work with executives and get executive sponsorship. Can you talk about how you implement yo-yo selling?
Yeah, I find it to just be incredibly effective. I was just talking about it yesterday. And what I love about yo-yo selling is, and for anyone who doesn't know what it is, it's like trying to get high up to power, like a yo-yo, right? Trying to get high up to power and then intentionally going down and then getting the information you need and then going back up to power. So an example of, I mean, it helped me so many times last year, but one critical example I can think of was another media company. I don't know why today I'm thinking of all these media companies, but another media company where we were working directly with the CEO, kind of similar as what I mentioned before. They wanted to cross-sell, upsell their customers. They were very pained by how they transacted with customers. They were very pained by the spreadsheets and manual processes involved in recognizing revenue, getting a clear view of customer transactions, all the processes involved when a customer places an order through their billing cycles. So we learned that. We were able to get a hold of the CEO, and we had 30 minutes. So in those 30 minutes, you know, we spent maybe 10, 15 minutes just reconfirming that we understood the priorities and pains correctly. And the CEO shared some insight around what was more important, gave us some feedback on things that we could think about a little differently. And then we realized that, well, we already knew this, but for us to do a proper evaluation for the project, we needed to see what's under the hood. We needed to do reverse demos. We needed to get data. We needed to understand their exact processes, where data sits, where it needs to move, what that entire process of a customer placing an order to receiving an invoice entails, what they had already tried, who the different stakeholders involved are, like it on and on. So like, we're not going to go spend all this time unless it's customer serious. So yo-yo selling, you know, starting with the CEO, or even if you can't start there, trying to get there as soon as you can. And then we asked for some micro commitments, and the micro commitments being like the quick yeses, right? So, or no's, quick wins rather, easy wins. Like, okay, great. So it sounds like we understood this project, these priorities correctly based on what feedback you just shared. For us to do a proper evaluation, we'll need to, you know, do these reverse demos, work with this team, do this process, do scoping, do sizing, and then present you a readback. Does that sound good? Okay, yes. All right. So for us to do that, can you please make sure your team is willing to share data with us that you're able to share and is willing to do those reverse demos? Otherwise, we're not going to be able to tailor you an appropriate recommendation, and this can be very generic. Yes, you're able to do that. Okay, fantastic. All right, what's your timeline for the project? You said you wanted to have this done yesterday. What does that even mean? Okay, you want this to be done by, what is it, Q4. So Q4 sounds like around October, November for you. Would it be possible to commit then that we have a readback in mid-October, and we'll bring our executives to do that presentation and present your findings? Yes? Okay, fantastic. Okay, so then we need to do all these meetings, the scoping, this whole all these evaluation exercises with your team in before that readback. And we'll probably want at least a week or two to consolidate all of our findings and formulate them to present to you mid-October. So we really would want to complete all those efforts by end of September. And it's July right now, right? It was, I think, at the time. So we have about 2 months. So can we commit to that timeline? Yes. Okay, so we're going to convey that timeline to your team. Would you please convey the same so that they're diligent about working with us? You know, yes, no. And then if we hit certain success criteria, can we validate with you, firstly, that this is a success criteria? Can we validate that we would that you would be able to execute on a contract by end of October? Mm-hmm. Yes, no. And then that's usually the stickier one, right? That there, no one's going to want to say yes, I'll absolutely commit to signing a contract. But just going through that exercise, I feel gives us the ability to then, starting from the top, go down with purpose, right? And then stay down and get all the findings, knowing that we'll go back up,
yeah,
rather than having an executive kind of kick us down and then we're like struggling to get back to the top.
Yeah, you're running the play to a T, like a master quarterback. You're running it. When you talk about those micro commitments, though, it does seem like, yes, you're making a lot of asks, like yes, no questions, but it is a couple of asks. What do you do when you run into resistance there? Like, do you ever run into some sort of like, you know, no, we're not really comfortable sharing data, or no, you know, I don't want to really communicate to my team. You can figure that out with them. Like, what do you do when you run into resistance with those questions?
I hope I run into resistance. If I didn't, I wouldn't take the executive seriously, right? So, like, I anticipate no one's just going to say, like, yes, timeline's good, I'll sign the deal if you get everything right, and we'll share our data with you.
Right.
So usually we'll get some kind of resistance, but I like to ask them because it helps us understand what the kind of hidden concerns are, right? So usually they'll start to come out when we ask those questions. And we might learn something like, oh, there's some confidential data they don't want to share. Oh, there's also another competitor they're looking at. Oh, there's a renewal in the mix of something else they didn't tell us about, and are considering using that other tool they have in some other division of the company for this project too. Like that was a huge one that came out of this exact example I just discussed, that when we asked about their micro commitments, we found out that there was a renewal of another tool, and I didn't know about it had I not asked those 3-4 questions. And then the other is success criteria is huge, right? You don't want to, at least like, we didn't want to go through all those steps to understand scope of the project, align with priorities, and then not really have success criteria, right? So that was really crucial as well. And again, I don't expect yeses to all the micro commitments, but just the I think effort of going through that conversation, even in just 10 minutes, is very powerful.
So do you then find yourself almost objection handling if you do run into resistance, or is it like another play that you run after that? Like, what's your, because I know that time with executives, when you get that initial meeting, sometimes it's limited. Most executives won't even give you half hour, right? It's like a 15 to 20 minute meeting usually. Here's our point of view. What do you think? What are your thoughts? Let's get aligned. Right. So
yep.
if you run into resistance, are you then spending the remaining time, you know, addressing that resistance, or is there a different approach?
No, I mean, I just want to understand why, and then I'll move to the next, right? So I just want to understand, my goal of that whole exercise is to make sure this project is legit, and that we will be able to re-engage this executive, and that all the troops below the executive will, you know, help and be collaborative with what is needed to do a succinct evaluation. That's it. And if something comes out of there that makes us realize, all right, we need to modify our plan, you know, that's fine. So if we receive some concern about, oh no, the timeline's actually a year. Okay, great. Then we'll extend the timeline of the project. We won't deem it as high priority and as urgent. Mm-hmm.
This is gold, man. I'm learning so much in the process. And yo-yo selling is something that we teach, but you're running a masterclass.
Yeah, no, I learned it. I learned it in this program. Yo-yo selling specifically in this program. And Ian and even Mike in the program are really good at this. And I remember at the mastermind in April, Jamal Reimer had come as well.
That's right.
And he had also done a talk about it. And I think he had talked a little bit more specifically about the micro commitments, but really just, I think combining, everyone has a different perspective on this topic and there's different terms beyond just yo-yo selling. But I think it's just a concept of like being very intentional with how we get to power and then purposely leaving, like saying goodbye. I don't want to talk to you anymore. I'll talk to you in like 2 months or a month or 6 months, whatever it is. Right. We might give you like little quick updates and then like, you know, skiing down the mountain and then going back up when it's time to, just being very intentional, right? So then if after that, getting to the executive, I then now go talk to some admin with the intention of, hey, I want to see what's under the hood. Mm-hmm. You know, let's go have lunch after. Yeah. That's great. But to be that other, you know, relationships building seller who's like stuck to the admin without really any path to an executive, I think that's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those listening who might not understand, like, why on earth would somebody get to an executive and then just say bye? The reason is because at least the studies tell us that if you were getting the executive involved too much, then they're just going to look at you or the project as a burden because they've only got so much time. They've got dozens of other priorities. And it's just not worth their time to be so involved in a project, which is why, like you mentioned, it's so important to just get that sponsorship, get them to give the okay, the green light to their team to work with you. And then all of a sudden, you're almost like an executive working for their company, as opposed to working as an account executive from your company. So I love the way you're approaching it. I think the other thing that, and you've talked about this a bit already, but one of your staples has been selling new logos. Which for a lot of people is actually the toughest part. They can sell to current customers, but they have a really hard time selling to new logos. Mm-hmm. What's your secret sauce? You know, what's getting you so deeply embedded into new logos, selling these, you know, massive strategic deals? Like, how are you doing that?
Well, I would love to learn from, I guess, the people who are doing the opposite, because I need to focus a lot more on expansion this year. And I was a lot more focused on new logos last year. But I think secret sauce is, I mean, it just, I think it's what I said before, which is, like I said, 40% were of my new logo deals were more of the traditional, like IT, technical integration, get to a CIO. And I think a lot of AEs who are trying to close new logos, especially for technical products, that's all they're doing. That 40% I described is their 100%. So really latching on to what are the key strategic priorities of the organization, of the C-suite, of the board members, what challenges do they all share? What challenges are they all invested in solving? And then learning them to the root of the pain, to the true cause, and then gauging where may I be able to help or where I may not, and then walk away.
Just the full masterclass on it. Like, you really need to come in with a full, with a point of view, with a fleshed out point of view, is essentially what you're saying. You can't just go in blind, like start cold calling, new logos out of nowhere. Yeah. Like, you got to come in with perspective if you're going to embed yourself in the organization.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And it needs to align with C-level executives. Mm-hmm. Otherwise you're just, you could still get a deal, but it'll probably be a much smaller deal.
Right.
Or it'll be a slower sales cycle.
Right.
Right. Where you'll be like the 5th or the 10th or the 20th priority with procurement or with the CFO. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be in that top one or two or even third priority. Mm-hmm.
Did you see this? Like, you've done so well, right? Number one, again, on your team. Did you see this when we did the visualization exercise at the first, mastermind event that we did? We were talking about that right before we hit the record button, but you did this visualization and you said it was really powerful for you. What did that event do for you? What did that visualization do for you?
Yeah. I think it was just visualizing more specifics around, how I want to achieve my goals, what goals they were, what it would mean to me. And then I think thinking like 10, 20 years ahead, which I never do. And I was just like,
bro, I'm the opposite. I'm always thinking 10, 20 years ahead. That's my problem.
It's because you just got married.
Yeah, fair.
Or who knows? But yeah, I think a lot of people will say things like, oh, in 5, 10 years, 20 years, will this even matter? Or, oh, it's insignificant. And so I think sometimes it's in a positive way to feel that, oh, I shouldn't be stressed about this, which is, I think that's a great way to look at it. Mm-hmm. But I saw this as like, 20 years from now, like, this year is going to matter to me. This is going to be the year. So, I think that just made me like way more all in and fully committed that I didn't want to lose.
Yeah, it's why we love having you in the program. You've been all in and fully committal since the beginning. You continue to be that. And we love having you in the community, brother. I know you're giving a fireside chat at the upcoming mastermind, which I'm super, super pumped about. Because you deserve it, man. You've put in all the work, and I'm sure you're going to continue to reap the rewards of your efforts. What advice would you give to somebody? For somebody who's considering joining Untap Your Sales Potential or investing in sales coaching, what would be your advice to them?
Yeah, I would say one is, go all in on the things where you see the most value. You can't do every single topic. And some of the topics are just not going to be that useful to you. They're going to, you need to figure out what are the three or four that matter to you the most. And then, like Ian always says, give yourself grace. You can't just beat yourself up and like, oh, I said I was going to do these 20 tasks. I said 12-week year, and then I didn't complete it, or I forgot to plan this, or I said I was going to do yo-yo selling, but here I am talking to the admin again. So, like, just give yourself some grace. I think that's huge. But then really just being all in on the program, focusing a lot more on the learnings and the output, the muscles built, rather than the quota, the outcomes, the commission checks. I think it's just will make anyone reap way more value and just enjoy it a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of this happens when you show up, right? Like you, Nitin, not only were you doing the one-on-one coaching, but you were consistently showing up to the group coaching. You're consistently being engaged in the community. Like you said, be all in. And what that means intangibly is show up, don't show up for the coach, show up for yourself, right? Show up what it would mean for your family, show up for what it would mean for your health, your wealth, your relationships, all of that to be committal, right? And to stand by the things that are important to you. So again, thank you for coming on the show. If people have questions, want to learn more about you, how they get in touch with you, reach out to you.
Yeah. They can, ping me on LinkedIn, or if it's someone in the program, I mean, just shoot me a text.
Nice. I'll put it in the show notes. Before we end this for today, Nitin, what's one last piece of advice you'd give to my listeners to help them achieve their next big win?
I think really just what Ian says, which is focus on the output, not on the outcome. Mm. It's really just do what's in your control. right? Like, it's so hard to predict how exactly you're going to achieve that end of the year goal.
Yeah.
When the wins happen, where you're going to lose. But if you just say, hey, you know what, this quarter, that's why I love 12 week year, but this quarter I'm going to set out these goals, and every week I just need to commit to doing at least 80% of my planned activity and leave 20% for some strategic fluctuation, or just giving myself grace, as Ian says it, I think that's probably the best way to go about the program.
I love it, brother. Thank you so much for coming on to Winning Streaks.
Of course. Thank you for having me on, and looking forward to seeing you in Lake Arrowhead in April.
Yes, sir.